This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. Welcome to Phillies Therapy. That's what's in. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb. If you're watching us on Twitch, hi out there. If you're listening to us afterward, you may notice no change in programming. We're testing something out today. If you want to incorporate a little video into your lives, incorporate a little bit of our beautiful faces on top of your oral podcast enjoyment, we are soft launching a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Phillies Therapy, where you can watch us record this or not. If you don't, that's the great thing about living in the future, is you have that choice. Anyway, baseball, the Phillies are good, Matt. The Phillies are 19-10 with two games left to go in April. That's a lot of games before the end of April.
Do you know how many times they've won 19 of their first 29 games in the last 123 years?
Well, I know I was looking it up yesterday, and I know that they've never won 20 before the end of April. So this has to be. Go ahead. When's the last time?
Well, it doesn't break it down. I'm just saying for the first 29 months. And so they've only done it. They've only done it nine times in 123 years that they've gone at least 19-10.
That is
so what you're watching is, not something that happens a lot.
It's really not. I mean, how much time did we spend in the spring talking about how different would this team look if they just got off to a good start for once? The last 2 years, they didn't do this. Through May into June, they were under 500. They were treading water in the worst way, not like what they were doing in the first, week and change of this season. They are flying out of the gate. And it's just so unusual to see them be nine games over 500. Here at the end of April, it's unusual, right? They haven't done this since 2011. I'm guessing that was one of the last ones.
Yeah, that's the last one.
And it feels new again. Think about where you were, where I was 13 years ago. I can barely even remember it at this point. It's been a long time. So many of these guys were barely even playing like high school ball, middle school ball back then. It's a brand new world for all of us. And it's fantastic. It's not really sinking in that they're off to this good of a start for me because it's so unusual, but it's great that they're doing exactly what we wanted them to do. It's one of the last boxes to check, and that is get off to a good start and not completely cede the division within the first month or two to the Braves.
And of course, the Braves have just kept winning, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
It's funny. I mean, the Phillies have the third best record in baseball right now, or fourth best. And, the Braves are right there still. And, it's about banking wins, and sure, you can point to the level of competition they play. And it hasn't always been great. I think you could say the same thing about some of the teams the Braves have played too. It's funny because all of a sudden now the Marlins, I was sitting at a table. I don't remember who I was sitting with. Last homestand for eating dinner with a couple other writers, and we were talking about how bad the Rockies and White Sox were, and I was like, I have a hot take. I think the Marlins are going to be the team that has the worst record out of those three teams, the Marlins are. Yeah, that's bad. That's not good. But anyway, the Braves have played the Marlins a little bit. The Phillies have yet to play the Marlins, and I know they've given them difficulty in the past, but this is a compromised Marlins team that is going to sell off every single piece they have. So that's just a roundabout way of me saying that. I mean, there's you know, you play who's on your schedule. Of course, we talked about this, and you know, 19 out of your first 29 games is impressive, regardless of who you're playing. And I think the way they've done it is even more impressive, just especially in the last, you know, 10 days, 12 days, where they've just, you know, a lot of these games, they get out early, that pitching holds up, and there's not a ton of drama.
Yeah, you know, you want to have fewer stressful innings than I think this team was giving us early on too, right? Even as they were eking things out.
Especially if you're a reliever on this team.
Yeah, sure, right? Like they were playing so many of these close games, they weren't really giving themselves the opportunity to relax. And then within the last couple of weeks, all of a sudden, finally, that's changed. We finally have the ability to deploy guys in ways that you help, you know, you hope they work something out. You hope they have the chance to, you know, whatever is it plaguing Sir Anthony Dominguez right now, you want to get him into a lower leverage spot. If you want to ease Orion Kerkering back into action, you know, it's nice to get him in high lev because you plan on getting him in high lev, but it's also, nice
I do think it was interesting how he got five outs in that game in Cincinnati last week. That gives you a little hint of how they might use him. I think like he is, he's going to get a lot of different chances. Like he'll get leverage, obviously like leverage spots, but I think he, you know, there's some flexibility there. Yeah. I think I have this right. I'm looking at now they were not 9 games over 500 last year until the Christian Pache game, July 7th.
I was going to say it had to have been sometime in July,
which was probably, I thought was like probably their best regular season game last year where, it was that road trip where they ran all over the Rays and the Marlins like right before the All-Star break, and then Pache hit a go-ahead homer with two outs in the top of the ninth inning to straightaway center at Marlins Park. That was a good one.
Yeah, I remember texting with you around that time, especially after they finished off the Tampa Bay sweep, because at that time Tampa Bay was, you know, they were cooling off a little bit from that white hot start they got off to last year, but it still felt like they were a team to be reckoned with. They were still very much a championship contending team, even though they had been a little bit more ordinary over the previous, you know, month and change to that point. So to go in there, going to Tampa Bay, which isn't really known for its home field advantage, but to go in there and be like, oh yeah, they took care of business. They really made themselves look good. Like that was nice to see. Like maybe that was the point.
That was the point where they started playing better ball. But it's funny because once they got to 9 over on July 7th, they were already 11 back. So, I mean, you know, it's a very different situation now. And no doubt the proof will be in 6 months. You know, how do they do over the course of 6 months? But I think as we've talked about, you and I, and on this show numerous times, I mean, this is a good team. And just because they're still staring up at the team above them does not mean that it's, you know, any less impressive the start they've had. And I also think that, again, like I have seen nothing that indicates to me that there will not be a race for this division through the summer and into September. I truly do believe that.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing that's happened in this first month that should dissuade you from believing that. And I think largely it's due to a few things. A lot of things. The first is on the pitching side, just the entire staff.
Every single guy, pretty much, right? It's like you try to figure out what's been most encouraging, and we could talk for 2 hours probably.
Oh, we probably could. We'll try and condense it for all of
you.
But
we're not going to talk for 2 hours.
Yeah. No. And then a couple things on the hitting side are looking pretty good. There's some a little more up and down on the hitting side than on the pitching side. But let's
fourth in OPS all of a sudden.
Yeah, right. Where did that come from? Well, I mean, largely on the back fourth of Alec Bohm being player of the month here in April. Let's look at that micro for a second, right? Let's think about what this last month has shown us and what we can take away, what we can really take away from the way these guys have performed, because I think there are a couple of different ways you can look at some of these numbers and some of these performances that the team has had over the first month. We can start with the pitching staff, because I think that is where it's harder to find anything negative. There really is just almost all positive, with a couple of small exceptions, so few that you can really just kind of count them on one hand, which is a nice place to be in. Obviously, as you watched yesterday, Sunday afternoon, that was Taiwan Walker's season debut. He's back from shoulder limitations that kept him sidelined for a little bit. And he looked good through six innings.
Legitimately surprised they sent him back out there.
And then the seventh inning happened. Yeah, yeah. I was surprised too. And then, you know, okay. So
And I'm obviously not out there. I'm here at home. The New York Times doesn't have the money to send me to California, so I apologize for that. I did give me a chance to go to use my Sixers tickets for game four, which was one of the most depressing experiences of my life, attending that game with so many Knicks fans around me. It's tremendous. Oh, man. I hope nobody saw me at that game. But what was I gonna say? I know, I forget.
what were you gonna say?
Whenever the Sixers enter my mind, it's just everything else is terrible. Where was I going with this? I'm sorry.
We were talking about Taiwan Walker.
Oh, right. So I'm still trying. I'm not out there. I'm trying to catch up on why certain things are happening. And I'm a little confused as to why they're going to start Turnbull tomorrow, which is what they're going to do against the Angels. They're not going to, this will be his last turn. They won't go to a six-man rotation for this reason. And that, like, all of a sudden now Zach Wheeler gets an extra day, which is fine. Like, one extra day here and there, you know, that's fine. He doesn't like it, but, you know, sometimes you got to tell him to do it. But Aaron Nola ends up getting, I think, two, maybe even three extra days between starts. And again, you want to give your guys some extra rest where it makes sense and where possible. But I do think early in the season, you can almost disrupt a guy's rhythm and routine, because when you give a starting pitcher extra rest, it isn't really like rest. I mean, it actually increases his work between starts. Like, I am assuming, and I would be shocked if Nola doesn't throw two bullpen sessions between starts just because of the longer time between outings. And I don't know, like, this is a pitching staff right now. I don't really want to disrupt too much of what they're doing. And, you know, they have some scheduled off days. Like, they're off Thursday, they're off I think next Thursday too. So that helps you get some rest, extra rest naturally for some of these guys. And so the reason why they kept Walker in the game, apparently, as Rob Thompson told reporters who were there, Corey Seidman from NBC and Alex Cosby from the Inquirer, that, you know, they have a shorter bullpen when you have six starters. That means you have seven relievers. And so they didn't want to use too many guys because they, you know, they don't know who they'll have to use Monday night. I do know they're a little concerned about Sanchez's innings too. They want to make sure they're monitoring him, et cetera, et cetera. But if they had a full bullpen, I don't think Walker's going back out there for the seventh. And, like, you get him out for six, even if it was a lower pitch count, you're like, hey, look, you know, great first outing. You know, you put us in a position to win. You did everything we want you to do. So a little surprised to send him out for the seventh. And it's sort of this cascading effect of having six starters right now, which, again, will not last beyond this week. I just don't know if I agree with that decision. I also think that they're trying to do right by everybody, right? I mean, Spencer Turnbull has been really good, and they don't want to just, you know, it's not like, not that they're kicking him to the curb, but because he's still very important. He's just a very important piece of this pitching staff. And I guarantee you, and I know for a fact that they've gotten calls on Spencer Turnbull in the last week because their team's like, hey, you're not going to start this guy. What do you want for him? And the Phillies are like, no, we want to keep him, and we need to keep him. And that is the right thing. Yeah. So Walker, you know, solid six innings, and, like, probably shouldn't be out there for the seventh, but I bet this is what you expect going forward. I mean, the velocity was a little down. It's about where it was, you know, in some of his rehab starts. He got 10 swings and misses on 90 pitches, which is
I think that's good for him.
Massive encouragement. Yeah. But this is what you're going to get. This is what he is. And he's a fifth star.
You know, first of all, not at all surprised people are calling about Turnbull, and that's the sign of a move that's gone very well. I am very interested to see how they make all of this work with the juggling, assuming everybody stays healthy. But Taiwan is interesting to me because I was very encouraged up through the sixth inning yesterday. I would say very encouraged. I think things looked good, especially
he reached back and threw some 93s like up in the zone, which
You know, the velocity held, which I think was the most important thing. I was waiting for the moment when he threw consecutive fastballs, not cutters, because that's a little slower to begin with, but like consecutive fastballs, four seamers at like 89 or lower. That I was waiting for that. I was waiting
and
for
it
him
didn't
to
come.
Be.
Yeah,
it did not happen. Yeah. Yeah. His last four seamer in the sixth inning, I remember, was 91 and chain, 91.2, yeah. I think. And then he comes back out for the seventh, and then things just go a little weird. You shouldn't give up homers to Luis Camposano. Like that's a nice player, but that's not the guy you want to throw, you know, a belt high fastball to. Just don't do that, Taiwan. Avoid that next time, and I think you'll be good. But I up until that seventh inning, you know, I can still walk away from it feeling okay. You know, nobody's first start after injury is expected to go great. I don't come into it thinking somebody, no matter who they are, you know, Zach Wheeler is no different coming off of injury. You know, you can think down to somebody like Kirkring, who doesn't really have the track record of either of those guys at the major league level, but you're like, okay, first outing after injury, what are we going to see? Get through it healthy. Don't get smacked around. And I think we'll all be fine and just take it from there. And what I wanted to see out of Taiwan was, how's the command? Is he not throwing the ball all over the place? Does he look like he's super rusty? Any of that? And he didn't to me. He looked fine. You know, you had it exactly right. He is right now this team's fifth starter, regardless of what the payroll says, regardless of what his salary says. I know he's getting paid more than that. That's okay. As soon as a player comes into the fold on a team, it is, to me, less about what the dollar figure is and more how long are you committed to this player? Because that says more to me about what a team lately thinks about a player's fit or a player's ability is how long is that commitment? The Phillies wanted Taiwan Walker for 4 years because they looked at their system. They looked at the way things were set up and they thought, okay, we're a little short on innings. We're a little short on guys who we know can help fill up the, you know, whatever that figure is. You know, we've talked about 900 or so innings from the five starting pitching slots. Whatever the combination of players ends up being, that's roughly what you want to get, right? They said, okay, we're short on this. We have some good guys at the top, definitely, but we're a little short. And so they add Taiwan Walker to be the guy who they can count on to pick up 18 outs or more regularly than anybody who was in the system coming into last year, or most guys.
Which is an accurate assessment.
Yes, exactly.
Was and still is, honestly.
Yeah. So yeah. You know what they did? It is a supersized version of what they did with Whit Merrifield this offseason. They found a guy to fit a role and flexed a bit of the financial muscle in order to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember the market at that time, too. I mean, they liked Jameson Taillon a lot. I do know that. And I think that they thought Taillon was going to go for a lot less. You know, once we've talked, I mean, once his price went up and it was, you know, basically the same contract that they ended up signing Walker to, it was maybe four more million dollars they gave Walker total, like a million per year. But, you know, the market wasn't great, the mid rotation market. And everyone's like, well, what about Zach Eflin? And I think that is very much revisionist history because at the time, I just don't think he was viewed as an option.
Yeah, mostly because of his knee, right?
One thing about Walker, yeah, just because he didn't, you know, he barely, you know, got back to be a reliever at the end of 22. Obviously, it was a great story and it helped him out a lot in postseason. But
sure, you're
like, you know, is this guy 150 innings going forward? And the Rays have, you know, kept him healthy so far, and you know, we'll see. But I will say the one thing that's interesting to me, and I don't know if the pitch classifications are totally off. I don't think they are, but Walker threw 31 cutters yesterday, and only 12 splitters. That'd be interesting if he's throwing a spitball.
Yeah, right.
That was the highest percentage of cutters he's ever thrown in a start.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if they were trying to ease his
arm. I mean, he got five
way.
Whiffs on the cutter too. I mean, the cutter, it looked like it played pretty decently.
Yeah.
As best as I can tell, did he give up a home run on the cutter? Maybe. But yeah, I think, he is what he is. And you're right. I mean, like the contract, you know, you can't, it's going to end up being a bad contract. I mean, even if he ends up being a solid fifth starter for them, it's you know, probably a bad contract. So I think once you get over that hurdle, and some people won't, and I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. If you can get over that hurdle and see him for what he is, I still think he's an important piece for them in the regular season. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. He, you know, like the way things stand right now, if this is the team that gets, you know, heads to October, like he's again probably gets sidelined in October.
I would think so. Yeah. If everybody's healthy, for sure, it's going to happen. I know telling people, you know, you shouldn't really focus on the money. That never works.
No, and that's all right. I get it. It's a hard barrier to clear because they, you know, if anything, I mean, you evaluate the team on that, not him. I mean, like, he signed that, you know, it's a contract. It's his deal. Like, and the Phillies are the one that offered it to him. And they're not the only ones who offered him a contract in that range. There was competition for his services. So, you know, they're not the only ones who evaluated him at that sort of, they had him at that valuation. But, kind of is what he is. And that's, it's funny because, you know, we're focusing on him and he's really like the lone real question, maybe outside of Gregory Soto in terms of the pitching staff, the current pitching staff, that is. I mean, obviously, Connor Brogdon and Ricardo Pinto, who was DFA'd over the weekend, gave up a ton of runs in mop-up situations for them. But outside of those guys, Ranger Suarez, he's probably, like, he should win Pitcher of the Month in the National League. I know there's other guys that are candidates, but I don't think there's been a better pitcher in the league in April than Ranger Suarez, has there?
You know, Ranger versus Dylan Cease over the weekend was probably a matchup to win that award. It was certainly
Tyler Glasnow's had a really good month, but
That's true. Now Ranger should definitely be in the mix, and what he has been able to do has been tremendous because, you know, I for a long time I watched Tim Hudson frustrate the hell out of me when he, you know, started off in Oakland, didn't really face up
too much.
See
where this is going.
Yeah, he comes over to the Braves, and it's like, oh my god.
Oh, okay.
No. Tim Hudson had a way of managing his starts with stuff that is well short of blow you away level stuff. He was never a guy who would come out and be a threat to, you know, strike out 12 or 13 on a nightly basis. I think his, well, I have the page open and we can look at this right now. I think his career strikeout per nine or career strikeout rates were, it's a six per nine, right? Now, take that management of commanding your stuff, knowing where it's going to go, knowing how to keep guys off balance and being a soft contact merchant, and add on to it the fact that you can get way more swing and miss and you have Ranger Suarez.
Yeah.
Never mind the handedness difference. But that is the kind of thing I think about with Ranger, that ability, leaving everything else aside, that ability to generate that soft contact. Some pitchers can get a little bit lucky with the contact that they generate, right? Either
Got a 189, 189 batting average on balls in play. And certainly, there's some luck there, but
yes,
a lot of it is not, because a lot of it is.
He did it.
Go ahead. Yeah.
He's the one doing it. He is the driving force here, right?
Yes.
Batting average on balls in play is very instructive to tell you what has happened and a little bit of what could happen.
But a lot of this is just weak crap on the ground. I mean, and it's not by accident.
Exactly.
That is how he pitches. He's got a 61% ground ball rate right now. That's absurd.
It is absurd. It is absurd. And that's why I think a lot of what we've seen out of him is real. I think he's going to have a sub 2 ERA? I think the possibility is growing that he could have a high ones in the 99th percentile chance, but
sure. Yeah.
You know, this is not all smoke and mirrors. This is not a guy who has lucked his way into really shiny numbers. This is real, you know, eight times as many strikeouts as walks.
Yeah. And that's why, and he, to me, epitomizes, you know, the month of April for the Phillies pitchers is that, the numbers are off the charts for most of these guys, and they will not sustain those exact numbers for their whole season. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what they have done is not crazy. It's not overperforming to the point where you're like, there's no way they can keep this up, or there's no way that they can keep succeeding in this manner with this plan, with this strategy, with this pitch mix. I don't see a lot of that. I mean, there's very few instances, and maybe Turnbull is the biggest one, because, I mean, totally, you know, his 27 innings, to me, were the biggest surprise of April. Yeah. You know, a 1-3-3 in 27 innings. I mean, that's just not in any realm of possibility. So
nowhere close.
you know, you're talking about unsustainable. That's probably the biggest one right there. And again, you know, they're getting him out of the rotation after Tuesday, and he'll have a different sort of hybrid role, and he will no doubt be back in the rotation at some point for some reason or another. They will need him. But outside of Turnbull's performance, I don't think there's anyone you're looking at. It's like, this is totally, totally, totally unsustainable in no way that this guy can be the 80th percentile of what we've seen so far, right?
You know, one of the big things for me coming into this year was, how much can I believe what I saw of Jeff Hoffman last year was real?
Sure, sure.
You know, when you have cases of guys who are clearly talented, right? We have a top 10 draft pick, but a guy who has struggled at the major league level, bouncing back and forth between roles, between teams, really just taking a long time to find some kind of settled role, settled place.
How many times have we seen a Phillies reliever, you know, perform for 3 months out of a year and be like, and you're going to love my one example I'm going to give you. And it's, again, didn't have any kind of this stuff. But like, do you remember Jeremy Horst? Had like a 1.5 ERA for like, you know, 3 or 4 months in a season. You're like, wow, this guy is like going to be a solid setup reliever. And like, you just, relievers, you just don't know. You just don't know. But this guy's got great shit. Sorry for cursing. And I, honestly, like yesterday's performance, and you mentioned a couple days ago, what was the whiffs you had that? Well, you know, he threw absurd amount of whiffs and such a small amount of pitches, right?
Oh,
Not the outing on Sunday. It was the outing before that.
It was 7-20 pitches or 7-21 pitches, something like that. Yeah.
And then yesterday, I mean, he has been pitching with a little bit lower velocity. Yesterday it was up. Like, it was back up. I mean, he sat 97 yesterday, topped out at 98. You know, with that wipeout slider, it's a great pitch, especially against right-handed hitters. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks every bit the part right now. So does Strom. So does Kirkering. So does Alvarado. Since that first game, he hasn't allowed a run, right? Since the first outing?
You know, Jose, the thing with me and Jose, I've always had a thing in the back of my mind, like the ERA doesn't look great. That's
one
whatever.
Run. Sorry, but
like,
he's allowed one run since his first opening day.
Yeah, so like, you know, getting charged with 5 runs, you know, some bequeathed, right, in that game. All right, fine. The thing with me and Jose, health aside, is I've always been a little bit on edge about if the command is ever going to leave him because this stuff is so overwhelming. And 5 walks in 10 innings, 5 walks in 36 batters, like that's not ideal. That's not what he has been doing the last 2 years. And so you can be like, okay, that's not great. But the strikeouts are still there. He's still, you know, hovering around 30% K rate, which is fantastic. And
in fairness, the command has been better the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. You know,
he's needed much less pitches. There was a span there, like in early April, where he was needing, you know, 30 pitches to get 3 outs.
Yeah. Just 1 walk in his last 6 appearances. Like he's tidying things up. He's been his
but more your dominant point is, it's going to come. It's never going to be elite. It's not going to be back to where, you know, it's always going to be a question. And it's not going to be as debilitating of a question as it was in his, you know, in his past.
Right.
But it's not. Yeah. I know what you're saying. Is that what you're trying to say?
More or less. Yeah. Like that was kind of my worry. And you worry about it. It's like a Cinderella effect, right?
Yeah.
When does the glass slipper turn back, or when does the coach turn back into a pumpkin? The further we get out from Alvarado's Tampa Bay days and his very early Phillies days, where, you know, he was that erratic guy and they hadn't unlocked him and leveled him up to the level he's been for most of the last 2 years, the further we get out from that, the better I feel about it. And the same applies here with Hoffman, because like I was saying, you have a guy who's clearly talented. He's drafted to be a starting pitcher, and he couldn't really make that work. Pitching in Colorado is not going to help. But even when he got to Cincinnati, things were, you know, they got a little bit better. But you can see, you know, if you're looking on the screen here, hello again, Twitch, the walk numbers were still high. You know, the per nines were not good, and he was allowing home runs to boot. The pitching department with this Phillies team, I'm not going to say it's 100% effective, but they know what they're doing. And they saw something with Jeff Hoffman, and I'm glad they ended up adding him off of his minor league deal. We all are.
It was good scouting too. They were really. It was a combination of scouting and R&D, but it was there was a scouting element to this because they did see him in spring with Minnesota, and they liked it a lot, and they were called him right away.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's good to include props for them too. It is a joint effort. To identify guys either at the amateur, you know, level for amateur level or at the pro level, amateur, when you're trying to supplement your team this way, to find a guy like this and to make it work, you know, I was like, okay, that's your one hit wonder right there. That's it. We got what we're going to get out of him. We need to find a way to supplement this differently or make some other kind of backup plan. And Hoffman's like, you thought, hang on just a second. I'm not done yet. And sure enough, he is not done yet. He is, you know, he's running a 33% K rate. He's only walked
12th in the National League. I'm looking at this right now. 12th among National League relievers. You know who's fourth in K rate in National League relievers?
Who would that be?
Matt Strom.
Right. Matt of the sometimes negative FIP he was running for a bit. It's currently 0.48.
Do you know who's 11th in the National League relievers in strikeout rate?
Who would that be?
Eric Miller?
Oh, former Phillies great. Now
he's
with the
got
Giants.
A 5.5 ERA, but yeah, you know, he's striking out a lot of guys.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, the bullpen is always the most volatile thing. It is always the spot where something can go wrong the quickest or the most dramatically. We know that. We lived through 2020. but for the most part, this team on the pitching side has really had it all clicking in April. For me, Jeff Hoffman is a huge part of that. I love that what we saw last year out of him appears real.
Yes.
That's enormous to me. And now,
I agree. That's a good point. It's a big April development. You know, you see things, you're like, okay, you know, is he going to do it for 6 months? We don't know, but we at least see that he's just picked up right where he left off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anybody else on the pitching side you want to shout out before we check in on the hitters and what we think about their Aprils?
No, I just loved Zach Wheeler after his last start in Cincinnati because he was not happy about it. And I get why. I mean, like, he's given up one hit in each of his last two starts, right? I mean, he took a no hitter, you know, into the eighth inning of his, you know, start against the White Sox. And then, you know, really had to grind through the red start and only give up one hit. I mean, but he walked too many guys and he's not happy about it. I mean, like, the results have been great. He hasn't given up a run. You know, he's got a 1.93 ERA and 37 and a third innings. But you can tell that he's pissed off at himself. And I love it because this is watching an ace at work. You know, this is watching an elite pitcher who's getting, you know, tremendous results, not being satisfied with how he's getting those results. And like, you love it. Like, you love to hear a guy who's just achieved that rarefied air where it's like, he can start to really nitpick, you know, these sorts of things. And this guy's on a different level right now. And no, the command hasn't been good. Like, it really hasn't. Like, his command, and especially in that White Sox game, it was not good. He ran a lot of deep counts. You know, his command in that third inning where he was on, you know, they had to get somebody up. He was on the verge of coming out. He threw, I think, 34 pitches in that third inning against the Reds. Didn't give up a run. But I think it's really cool to watch him, you know, really just become this ace of aces. I mean, he's just on a different level right now, the way he's looking at it and thinking, and obviously the performance.
You know, it can sometimes get lost on me, and I only catch up in retrospect, thinking about what a truly great run of performance looks like. I think having the playoffs and having the ability to watch Wheeler do, you know, some of these things on that big stage has soften that possibility here a little bit. But you're right. It's not just that, like, we've moved past the thinking like Zach Wheeler's contract is one of the best free agent starting pitching contracts in history. That was the mode of conversation for a little bit. And now we are beyond that. Now we are into thinking about what will the rest of this guy's career look like? And do we need to start thinking about grassroots campaigning for like Koufax Clause Hall of Fame, right?
Wow. Okay.
Now that's not going to happen. But when a guy does this sort of stuff, he's not going to get into the Hall of Fame. All right. I'm just talking about the change in conversation.
Sure.
The change now where we're not simply just thinking about, wow, yeah, that really worked out for a couple of years. We should all feel, you know, pretty good about that. That's nice to see. Now we need to think about, yeah, okay, how many more seasons of this can he do? Can he put up, you know, another rest of 2024 and then a couple more years of his new deal, you know, 25, 26, beyond into his late 30s? You know, is the relative lack of mileage, even given his injury history, is that going to continue to play in his favor as he gets older? Sure. I can now start thinking a little bit more, you know, a little bit more flowery language. Again, I'm using the most extreme here, but I am starting to think about, okay, can this guy truly elevate himself to be in that conversation for one of the game's greats, one of this era's true greats? Not going to be a Hall of Famer. I do feel like I need to clarify that a little bit because I got a little bit out of pocket there. But the run of seasons he's been on, if this had happened earlier in his career, it would absolutely be a valid thing to start thinking about. If he was doing this when he was, you know, up through his age 29 season.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Then you could do that, but it's a little late for that. But that's the kind of run he is on. And it's great to notice that. It's great to experience that. It's great to acknowledge that for what it is in that moment and not have to look back in the past and
but,
be like,
but to those oh, yeah, to that wow, point you're making that dynamic, like I think that is fueling him right now. Because like I think he realizes, I don't say that he like missed, he didn't catch the wave that he was supposed to catch, that was supposed to be there for him. Mm-hmm. But now he's caught it at age 34, and he only has 3 more years after this year. Like he will not play beyond, that's it. Like he he's made that pretty clear. Like he will be done. Even if he's pitching at an elite level, this is it. He's got this year and then 3 after that, and he will no longer be playing baseball. And I think he's almost like come to realize is like, this is where I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to be at this point in my career. And like, does it bother him that he didn't win the Cy Young in 2021? Without question. Does it bother him that he didn't, you know, that he didn't catch this wave in his late 20s instead of his mid 30s? I think so. Yeah, I do. But I think it's driving him like to just like be as great as he can possibly be for whatever time he's got left in this game. And watching him evolve on the mound, the way he thinks about things, you know, picking up a splitter and, you know, just like making it an elite pitch immediately. Yeah. It's so much fun to watch. And like I don't say spoiled, but I mean, we've seen a lot of really great pitchers in the last 20 years come through the Phillies, you know, and this guy is right now, he's right up there, I think, with some of the greats that we've seen.
Amen.
Which is crazy to say. I mean,
it is.
Know. But yeah, he's really good right now.
Speaking of which, I just bought my tickets to Cole Hamels' retirement night. Very excited to get back out to the park and see that. That is in June.
Okay.
I need to actually look this up. Yeah, so I'm going to be at Cole Hamels' retirement night, June 21st. Very excited about that. You talk about, you know, franchise greats and the guys who have come through here. That's one of the first guys that pops into my mind. He is, you know, my generation's keystone starting pitcher for the Phillies. There are others who have come through and had great moments, absolutely. But, you know, that's the guy from draft all the way on through to, you know, NLCS and World Series MVP. That's my dude right there. So to put him along, you know, put him on those rafters and hang that banner up there, that's pretty nice. Would like for Wheeler to join the party and become a fellow champion too. Okay.
So we talked a lot about the pitching, yes, rightfully so.
Yes,
you know, first in ERA in the National League, tops in strikeouts, a lot of very good things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm not to say that, like, you know, it was not a great, great month for the offense. I think that's pretty clear. I mean, there was a stretch there where it was not good, but they are emerging, and, you know, April's not done yet, but if we're talking about the first 29 games, first month of the season, they are emerging with the fourth highest batting average, fifth highest on base, fourth highest slug in the National League. Eighth in runs only, which is funny.
It's
starting to even out, right? Because they were near the bottom for the first 2.5-3 weeks of the season. Weird month for the offense, but like, you know, you look up and like, they've won 19 of 29 games. And so there will be times, we've talked about this, where the pitching's going to carry the offense and the offense is going to carry the pitching. I'm sorry, my phone is buzzing. And, you know, for them to win 19 out of 29 without what we would describe as their expected offensive performance, it's, I mean, you have to take that. But then again, like, they're fourth in OPS right now. So it's like it was a weird month for the offense. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, like, Alec Boehm, we can't have this podcast, this episode, without talking about Boehm. And I'll let you start with your thoughts on him, Paul. But I mean, I don't know. As a whole, I mean, it was a weird, weird month offensively. And they're still right about where they should be as a whole. Just weird of how they got there.
Definitely. You know, when things were not going well early in the season, JT was one of the guys who was putting together consistently the best at bats. And over the last couple of weeks, he has seen his numbers fall off. He has had, you know, his struggles in the last 2 weeks while everybody else has caught up. Alec Bohm
pretty much. Yeah.
Is I can't even count the number of times where you and I have sat down and I have been vocally frustrated with Alec Bohm. Whether it was, I don't know, the lack of progression with the defense and the increasing encroaching thoughts of, oh, does he need to move to first base, over to how does a guy with this swing not put up better numbers at the plate? How is he not hitting even 40 doubles, even if he's not going to be a power guy? This looks like a gap-to-gap swing. That was his reputation in college and getting drafted. You're like, oh, you got a guy who's, you know, he's going to spray the ball. He's going to be a good hitter. You know, you live with the defense because he's going to carry that bat. And for the first couple of years of his career, you know, the COVID season notwithstanding, because it's hard to take anything as
real. It wasn't enough. I mean, it was a good 6 weeks.
Yeah. You know, you look at the way he started off and you're just like, oh man, he's into his mid-20s already because he was a college draftee. And you're like, oh gosh, this is just, there feels like there could be something more and it's just not happening. And then last year wasn't a huge breakout at the plate. He did get to 30 doubles and 20 homers for the first time. He had a lot of success with runners in scoring position, which I think, you know, endeared him more to a lot of fans because, you know, everybody's going to like a guy who picks up the ducks on the pond. Yes. But you could see, you know, strikeouts were starting to get shaved a little bit. The discipline was getting a little bit better. Even just on the surface numbers here. And now, this month, we see a guy who, yes, absolutely, he's hitting the ball hard, you know, about as hard as he ever has. He's also getting some fortunate drops. You know, I've seen a couple in on the hands from him that he's been able to muscle out to the outfield grass to keep this hitting streak alive. And that's great. They're hits in the box score. Their line drives in the box score. It's all of that on top of improvements nearly everywhere you want to see them. The strikeout rate is still nice and low. The walk, you can't say enough about the discipline and being able to, you know, draw 14 walks this month. I mean, again, if you're looking at the page like I am right here, it's almost half his season total from his first couple of years. And he's just doing that in April. And on top of that, I know he's got three errors in the field right now. And some of these things go back and forth with the way official scoring is. I will continue to wage war on official
scores. He's had two plays like that have been scored one way, then reversed, then changed again. Yeah, it's weird.
You know, I don't love that. In the field, he is passing the eye test better than he ever has to me.
Yeah, he is.
And this is, you know, okay, is he going to come back down to earth? He's not going to have a 420 BABIP forever. Yeah, no matter how hard he's hitting the ball, sure. It's fine. The fact that this guy has lifted every part of his game is fulfilling and soothing the frustrations that I carried for years. It feels like an unlocking of potential. I want to see where his numbers eventually end up because they are going to come down. There is going to be some softening here. But I do think a lot of what has gotten him to this point and helped build this start is, you know, we were talking about with the pitchers, it's pretty sustainable.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, so that's my question for you, is like, what do you believe out of this? And so it's funny that you say that he's hitting the ball, you know, harder than ever. And he's not, though. Like, his hard hit rate is basically the same as it was last year. Same with the exit velocity. It's actually was higher. You know, he hit the ball harder earlier in his career. It's funny because I asked this very question, right, to Rob Thompson, like, last week. I think the last day in Cincinnati, I was like, you know, look, here's a guy who is, you know, looks like finally he is hit that sweet spot of mixing, you know, power with patience, which is, you know, what, you know, It's like the platonic ideal, especially for a third baseman, a big, tall guy, mixing power with patience. You know, do you think he's taking the leap? Like, is he taking the next step? And Rob's like, you know, I don't know. He might be. It also might just be a hot streak, a good month. And he's right. I mean, like, I don't know what to think about this because the walk rate you mentioned, I mean, that is that like jumps out. He's made a lot of better decisions at the plate. No question. He's swinging at strikes. He's taking balls, and those strikes he's swinging at, he's generally pulling them in the air for power, which is like, you know, everything that we've wanted to see from Alec Bohm for, you know, for years now. He is pulling the ball more. That is, he's carrying right now his highest pull rate that he's ever had. And that is noticeable. And that is a reason why he is hitting for more power, I think. Does it hold up? I don't know. I mean, if it does, it's going to change a lot of things that we think about Alec Bohm. If he has, you know, a breakout season, you know, with a 900 something OPS, let's say, for example, right? A low 900, low 900s OPS, like a 910, 915 OPS, which I think is, you know, it's possible. I don't know if it'll happen, but I think it's possible. And I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure how to evaluate him. He's looked really good. I don't know what, I don't know. He's fun to watch because, he's clearly having a lot of fun and, you know, he's taking those steps that we've wanted to see. Like,
yes,
if he keeps it up, man, I mean, like it could be something special.
You know, it's hard to talk about starts like this and acknowledge, there's going to be some worse times ahead without sounding too negative. It's just the reality that things are going to come down a bit. It's all about how you soften it and how gradual that slope works.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
What you don't want to see is a cratering. You can see that with, you know, how often do I try and point out those red flags of unstable strikeout to walk ratios for hitters, right? If everything looks really out of whack, but a guy's running, you know, really nice surface numbers, you just kind of know in the back of your mind, like, that's not going to last too long. And I'm pulling up Jared Kelnick's page.
Oh, I say, are you going to pull up a guy the Phillies are going to see tonight? Actually, no. They won't see him tonight, but they'll see him this week.
No, like I look at Jared Kelnick and I'm highlighting his first 15 games. He was hitting 349, but he had struck out in 16 of his 47 plate appearances, while only walking four times. BABIP of 556. And
What is Kelnick doing now?
Well, in his last, his last six games since that stretch I was just looking at, he's hit 188, struck out six times in 18 plate appearances, same strikeout rate, walked twice, and his season numbers are now down to 305 with a 742 OPS, and he has still not hit a home run.
And this is, I want to make clear, like I'm not buying into Alec Bohm. I think what he's done is interesting. I will say this, like April 26th last year. Okay. His first, you know, I'm cherry picking here, but his first, his first 104 plate appearances, he had an 812 OPS, you know, a 365 on base, like, you know, eight walks, 17 strikeouts. It all was looking really good. And he did crater. I mean, he cratered pretty hard. His OPS got as low as 698. So, I mean, his next 160 plate appearances, he had a 625 OPS. So, I mean, that's the key. Both him and Marsh, same way. I mean, Marsh started out last year even better than he started out this year. And the key to both these guys taking that next step is like 6 months of relatively consistent production. And it's not going to always be really good or really bad. It's about those days where you're just like grinding out, you know, like a 1-for-4 of the walk, you know, and just consistently giving the team production. And then you look up at the end of the season and the numbers reflect that. And for these guys to take that step, I mean, that is what it will take. And it is the hardest freaking thing to do. It is.
It is freaking hard. I'm looking at the team's splits by runners on base here. Obviously, Alec Bohm is absolutely on fire with runners in scoring position. He leads the team in every discernible category when batting in those spots. But he's not alone. You know, you look at Brandon Marsh has been fantastic with runners in scoring position, hitting 389 with an OPS over 1250. Bryce Harper has had an uneven start to his season, but when runners are on and in scoring position, he is also doing very well in his 33 plate appearances. And then the team as a whole, when there's nobody on there, the team OPS is 110 points lower as opposed to, you know, with runners in scoring
have position. Those inning splits evened out yet? I know that's something you highlight, like, you know, they're batting splits, you know, like early in game as opposed to late in game when you're facing,
they have not.
You know, better pitchers. I mean, well, it's from innings seven to nine, you're traditionally facing, you know, good relievers. I mean, and they're, you know, you're facing stuff guys.
Inning eight has still been very unkind to this team so far. Within the split, their team OPS plus is 51. They're hitting 172 with a 490 OPS in the eighth inning as a unit. That's not going to get it done. You know, they are still coming out the gate very strong. 858 OPS first three innings, drops to 716 in the middle three, and then 645, seven through nine. You know, that does come with the asterisk, like you were mentioning. You do typically see very good pitchers at the end of a game, especially if you're trailing, which the Phillies were more frequently earlier on in the season. So you can expect numbers to look a little iffy. I do hope it evens out a little bit and there's more of an equilibrium there. We'll just have to see how it goes. I think one guy who, and this is actually a nice problem to have, if this is where I'm digging for problems, if we want to try and keep things a little bit balanced, I don't really have any problem with what's been happening among the regulars. Even Nick Castellanos, I think it's kind of understood that something is just a little bit off with him right now, but I still have faith.
Yeah, well, a little off?
I still believe that a guy with that track record is going to get a little better.
He's got to be. It's hard to be worse.
It is. This is a guy who, you know, he was known for his doubles, and he's got none. He hit
zero
a triple before he's got
doubles.
A double. You know,
zero doubles.
It's weird. Am I concerned about him? I guess a little bit. I'm still a little bit
you
more
should
confident
be concerned.
That. Well, I'm still right now in the moment feeling like there is, you know, there are still better days ahead. If we're still at this point, after a couple more weeks into May, and he's still doing this, all right, then I'm probably going to need to reevaluate. But I'm still hanging on to it right now.
And their issue is they really have no recourse here. I mean, it's like they've been able to hide it because they're winning, and you know, when you're winning. You know, and there's a couple of weak links, so be it. I mean, you just hope that by the time that the guys who are going hot fade a little bit, that your weak links have upped their performance. And that's what you're hoping for out of Castellanos right now. But they don't have a lot of, you know, people are like, why is he playing? And why is he playing every day? And, you know, maybe he could benefit from a day off. I do know that he really wants to play 162 games this year. It's like a stated goal of his. And they're willing to, you know, for now, try to keep him engaged because it's something that is in his head. And when Nick gets an idea, like, you don't usually want to stand in the way of that. And that's fine. I think that, like, part of this whole thing is managing people. And they do a good job, starting with Rob Thompson, of, like, managing people. He really manages his people well. And it's why they've had a lot of success since Rob took over. But this one's going to be tricky, especially if he doesn't hit. And I mean, I just, like, if he doesn't hit, though, Paul, like, what do they do? I mean, there, like, is not really a solution here because outfield is the thinnest spot in this organization right now, period. Hard stop. I mean, it's thin. Cody Clemens is going to play a little more outfield. I don't know if he has done it yet since he went back to AAA, but when they sent him back, Rob Thompson made a point of saying he will get more outfield time at AAA. I don't know if he can kick it out there. And I don't even know if, like, even if he can, it's like, what is he in the majors? Like, he's, you know, he's an extra guy, probably.
Probably.
You know, it gave him good contribution for the one game that he played. Tremendous. That's good depth, you know, right there. When you're calling up a guy for 3 days and it's a double and homer and the one game he plays, that's great. I mean, and you send him back and you got him there if you need him. I don't know that he's, like, a viable, you know, like, let's say they reach a point where they cannot play Castellanos. And so Marsh moves to right. And then you have this sort of, like, 10-headed monster in left field with Merrifield, Pache, Clemens. I have a hard time believing that is better than just running Castellanos out there every day. I hate to say that, but I don't know. Is it?
I still think, like you said, we're a little ways off from having to make that decision. And
there are long ways off from that. I mean, like, it's going to be June. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, if he has another month like he did now, like, it's going to it will be uncomfortable and they'll have to do something probably, but it's hard to imagine getting to that point. It really is.
Absolutely, especially with all the years he has left. You know, you need somebody to hang in there for a little while longer than just bailing out here in year 3 of 5. I think that's part of why I'm holding on, you know, to this too. And if you're watching on Twitch, my apologies. My camera just died because I forgot to plug it in.
Great job.
You know, that's why this sort of stuff is that's why we do tech rehearsals, right? So anyway, hello. You will continue to listen to me. Another element of why I'm holding on to this is because there is so much time left, and because the possibility of them forcibly moving on at this moment is so remote.
Oh yeah, no, it's not.
You
even,
know, it's just
within
not
within the realm of possibility. Yeah,
right. And so, you know, what else can I do? But you know, just brace myself and just be like, okay, I still think they can make it work, and I will continue to believe that they can make it work, and that's it. That's all. Because what else am I going to do? It's a little bit of resignation. That's probably not the healthiest mindset.
I mean, he was the worst position player in baseball in April. Right. When you layer on the defense, I'm imagining that his WAR is, I mean, I could pull this up quick, but I mean, I'm imagining that, you know, by WAR measurements, which, you know, again, after 1 month it is what it is, but he was about as bad as possible. So as to that point, it's like, it'll be hard to be worse going forward. And if he is, then there's a problem.
Yes.
This would be a bigger problem if they hadn't been winning, but they've been winning, and they can kind of look the other way right now when it comes to Castellanos. And that's a wonderful luxury to have.
And speaking of wonderful luxuries that can be obscured while winning, my only other real complaint, because, you know, Bryson Stott had a wonderful game at the end of the weekend, and I haven't really been panicking about him. I've always felt like he's going to, you know, get into some kind of groove and be better. And hopefully yesterday was the start of that. He looked good, and he's always still playing good defense. Like, I can't really be bothered too much. But there is another luxury that gets obscured or gets a little less press because you got a guy who's catching 145 games a year ahead of him. Garrett Stubbs has had a bit of a rough start to this year. Hasn't really played that much, which is probably contributing. He's had 17 trips to the plate. He's 2 hits.
Less about that. Long. I know what you're frustrated about. The work behind the plate has not been good. Yeah.
The work behind the plate is rough. Disappointing. Yeah. Look, it has got to be hard to fill a role like this, right? Every team needs backup catchers. Every team needs somebody to, you know, fill in and help share the workload. But even if you're not, you know, going to be counted on for your offense, and at catcher, you know, that happens a little bit more frequently than at other positions. If the defense isn't going to keep up, then things look a little iffy. And that's a shame, because clearly this is a guy who's so popular with his teammates and with the fan. I like him. I want him to do better than that. I want him to have more success than this. But now, you know, we're working on a year plus of subpar offense, and then the defense has not looked good to start. I would like for this to not be something to worry too much about, right?
The role feels is like what it is. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, of all the things to be, you know, be worried about, I guess it's like a good thing to be, you know, not so pleased about. But I think that it's less about the trips to the plate and more about the work behind the plate. Yeah. It's just not clean. Like, there's just been too many little things where you're like, you know, 3 pass balls. You know, just not, you know, Stewart, I think base runners are like 7 for 7 against him, you know, which again is not always, you know, usually it's on the pitcher because they do have extremely slow pitchers, on the whole, but, it's gotta be better. And you're right. It's hard. I mean, he plays like once every 10 days. It's freaking like he'll play one of these Angels games. I don't know which one. I assume how the Turnbull start, although they're facing 2 lefties. I don't know. Like, maybe he starts tonight. Against a righty, and then JT gets the next 2 days because JT did a day game after a night game in San Diego. So this is what it is, though, and like they like the work he does behind the scenes, and I know it's really good in terms of the game planning, and because even on the days he does not play, like, he's very heavily involved in the game plan and the strategy, and is in those meetings and is you know, sort of quizzing JT, and they kind of come up with a plan. They each come up with a plan, and then they sort of compare notes. Even on the days that Stubbs doesn't play, it's pretty interesting. I don't think that's happening everywhere. But yeah, it's got to be a little better. Do I have any gripes about the first 29 games? I don't know.
That's basically it, right? That's what we're resolved to at this point.
I think so.
It feels good, yeah. Honestly.
My favorite thing I've been tracking, and I did mention it in one of my stories last week. But I'm obsessed with this, and the player knows that I'm obsessed with it. And I don't think he's doing. I don't think he keeps doing this to just because it's a, you know, it's not like he's doing this to, you know. Because I keep asking him about it, but Kyle Schwarber in 29 games this year, right? All 29 games, he has swung at the first pitch of the game, the first pitch of the first inning, 14 out of 29 times.
Wow.
Almost half. Do you know how many times he did it in each of the last two seasons?
How many?
30 times a piece, 32 Whoa. Times a piece. Okay. And I am obsessed with this only because, like, you know, there's long standing. There's funny things about the first pitch of a game, right? And where does it start? It started with Jamie Moyer, who always, do you remember this? When Jamie gave up, I don't remember the Braves player who hit the home run. It was like Sunday Night Baseball, and it was a younger guy, and he jumped the first pitch Jamie threw him. It was like a BP fastball down the middle. It's first pitch of the game. And Jamie says, you know, how about a little professional courtesy? And that's because the professional courtesy is that you're not supposed to swing at the first pitch. That's like an old baseball thing, right? And I am fascinated because think about it, Paul, like, what is usually the first pitch of the game? What is it?
Fastball.
A hittable fastball for a yeah. strike. And Schwarber is like, just he's swinging at almost every single one of them. And I love it. I mean, cause it might be the best pitch he sees in that at bat. And he hit he singled yesterday in the first pitch of the game Sunday. He's had some success putting that first pitch of the play, first pitch into play. I think I'm fascinated by it.
Look, if there's going to be all this talk about the changes in approach and, you know, a little bit of hand wringing and a little bit of fretting about what it's doing to some of these guys, you know, maybe it affected, you know, Bryson and Nick a little more outsized in the negative. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is a change that Kyle and company have come up with, you know, yeah. that's working out for the better. Like maybe there are,
no, he's positive. Sure. This is a conscious
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he's so. You know, because he worked a lot of deep counts last year and it was beneficial for him. He drew a ton of walks. He also struck out a ton of times, too many.
And that's still happening. But
it's still happening. But I mean, I think he's trying to avoid. He's thinking more about those early count hittable pitches rather than working a deep count just to work a deep count.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's been good to see. It is nice, I think, for you and I to have an end of a first month on this show where we can just be like, yeah, things are looking pretty good. What we got to scrape to find.
Yeah.
Some,
I mean,
like,
and they have, you know, again, another winnable series here in Anaheim, a team that's, you know, really scuffling right now. And, you know, two of the three pitchers they're supposed to see in the series are putting up horrific numbers. And then you come home and, you know, you've got four against the Giants and two against the Jays, and then you go back on the road, you face the worst team in baseball, I think, the Marlins. And you got this home and home with the Mets and Nats. I mean, like, they still, like, the next 3 weeks here are, like, you know, this is not this is not the heaviest of lifting. It's still a time for them to make some hay and bank these wins.
Got to keep banking those wins. That's exactly right.
They have a home and home with the Mets. It's going to be funny.
Yeah.
It's a result of the London thing.
Yeah.
They had to do it this way, so they're playing two at New York on a Monday and Tuesday, and then two at home against the Mets on a Wednesday and Thursday. I don't think I've ever seen it. It's very unusual.
No, I don't think I have either. It is unusual. And I guess that's why they could pull this off. And that's the reason why, you know, part of the reason why they've played so many games.
A lot of games.
Here
yes.
in April.
They've already played three more games than the Braves. That is notable, I think.
Sure. I mean, even if it just relates to rest in the way, you know, we talk about some of these bullpen guys getting used, right? There is that's a stark difference in three yes. extra games to manage up until this point. And the fact that the Phillies are doing as well as they are in that regard shouldn't be discounted. I think that's good. All right, Matt. Well, speaking of Anaheim or Los Angeles, the West Coast, you had a story go up on Brandon Marsh that folks can read up at The Athletic and talk a little bit about that.
I did. It's Marsh's first time back at Angel Stadium since the day that he got that call that he was traded to the Phillies. And in a lot of ways, like, that, It was really fun talking to you about this, because you think about it, Paul. I mean, like, these guys are like humans, and like, and you know, one call, like one transaction, like a trade, you know, it doesn't just change like your professional life. I mean, it changes everything about your life. And for Marsh, obviously, it's changed for the better. I mean, he, you know, he's thriving on the field. He talks about in the story of how he's really found, he thinks, purpose, you know, with just being in Philadelphia and being around the people that he's now around. And, you know, he's very close with Alec Bohm, and they are living together again this season. And nice. it's very much an odd couple thing, but they love each other. And like, I think that it's helped each one of them out. And, he might, you know, like, it's crazy to think that without that trade, like, you know, he wouldn't have been friends with Alec Bohm. And it's just weird how, this thing works, and how everything is just sort of at the whims of these transactions. And, yeah, I was really cool listening to Marsh sort of have the perspective that he has now. And, you know, 21 months ago, that was the last time he was inside Angel Stadium, and his whole life was turned upside down. And, you know, it's a trade, I think, that so far has worked out for both sides. And, you know, it was cool. I appreciate him, like, really thinking about, you know, some of the answers to the questions. And, you know, I know people are like really like love reading about the relationship he has with Bohm, and it is it's real. It's quite the bromance, I think.
They are. It always strikes me, I'm looking at his baseball reference page right now, it always strikes me he's still only 26, 26 and a half. He just, maybe it's the beard and the hair. He gives off such old man energy, even with the bouncing around and everything. It's just, he's 26.
Like, he's only 26. Yeah. He's a year younger than Bohm. They're about a year apart. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, they're very much odd couple, because Bohm is a shy dude and Brandon Marsh is not that, but they've become really close. And I think it's helped both guys. I do.
Good stuff. Thanks, Matt. Well, thank you all of you for hanging in there with us on this week's episode of Phillies Therapy. Thank you to those of you who tuned in on Twitch amid my myriad technical issues, my camera shutting off. And I think you probably weren't hearing Matt for the first 10 minutes on the stream, which it's great. Really? This is why we do these things, right? Because if we're going to be aspiring professionals, as my camera goes out again, we need to iron this stuff out. And we can't do that without a nice audience to soft launch this stuff in front of. So thank you, everybody who hopped on there, and really, you're helping make this little boy's dreams come true. Thank you so much. I've been wanting to do that. I've been wanting to do this for a minute, and I think it's nice to just kind of do it. So that'll wrap this episode up. Matt, thank you as always for joining. Thank you all of you out there. Keep enjoying this run that this team is on as they bank these wins. Don't take it for granted. Maybe they pick up their 20th tonight as they take on Mike Trout and the Los Angeles Angels.
Isn't it great that the Phillies play the Angels every year now, so that the content creators can have, you know, the Mike Trout stuff?
Who, like us?
I'm not falling into this. No, but like, no, I'm not, you know, the content farmers, you know, who are like, oh, are the Phillies going to trade for Mike Trout? It's like, oh, the Phillies are playing Mike Trout, you know, and they can talk about, you know, what it'll take to trade for Mike Trout, which again, will not happen.
We'll be interested to hear his thoughts on the draft. Cooper DeJean, Quinyon, Mitchell. Yeah. Great.
I was not paying attention to the NFL draft at all.
Baseball podcast.
Just living Thank you, with the Sixers. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It's been a blast. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. We'll be back with you again next week, and maybe somebody else will too. I don't know. I'll keep that vague. We'll work on that. For Matt at The Athletic, go read his stuff. It's the best stuff out there. I am Paul. We'll catch you next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.